Rokon Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
We know what that music means.
Yeah. Congressman Adam Kinzinger is standing by. Telling me one thing, even though it's Navy.
Yeah. Hey, I'm heroically eating a kale salad right now. I could punch through walls, man.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And you got a little quinoa on that, Congressman, do you?
No, I'm not into that yet. I just got into kale, so I'm like a couple years behind.
Is the salad an entree for you? Because we were discussing this earlier. Or is that just kind of a side thing?
No, it's good. It's like an entree. I've tried to get more healthy just by eating green stuff, and it works. And I quit sugar, too, so that's all good. Anyway, nobody cares, really.
Well, no, nobody does. Okay. All right, let's...
I kind of did. All right, move on.
let us move on. All right, things going on in Asia that we want to talk to you about that are a little concerning. You got Kim Jong-un, didn't get invited to the G20, because why should he? And he launches 3 missiles into the waters off of North Korea. Then today, 88 different flag officers from the 4 branches of the United States military have signed a letter endorsing Donald Trump. Now, an admiral was on CNN a little bit earlier today and said that, you know, this idea that Trump has of arming the South Koreans and the Japanese potentially, or letting them decide whether they should be armed, it's not all that controversial of a notion. Maybe they should have nuclear arms because, you know, in case they do get attacked. Now, I think that just makes exponential the possibility of a mistake in a situation, especially like the one that happened yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I didn't hear about it until just now. I mean, if this guy said that, look, you know, the idea of giving Japan, first off, it's against their constitution. You know, after we defeated Japan in World War II, they can have a self-defense force. But then, you know, with that comes an agreement of U.S. protection. You know, South Korea, I mean, you start, you know, handing over nukes to South Korea, obviously you create a much more tense situation on the Korean Peninsula. I mean, right now they're kind of under our nuclear umbrella as it is. You know, look, I've been to South Korea, and the estimates are Seoul could actually be evaporated by artillery within 7 minutes. And that, you know, if there was actually a big war, the last thing we need to do is introduce new nuclear weapons into this. So, yeah, I mean, look, not to question the service of 88 people, anybody that writes a letter, you know, whether it's supporting Hillary or whether it's supporting Donald Trump. But I think the thing to keep in mind is there are thousands and thousands of retired admirals and generals out there. So while, right, you know, a letter of 88 is noteworthy, it doesn't mean that the whole U.S. military agrees with arming South Korea, for example.
Now, what's interesting, too, if you're looking at what's happening in Japanese politics, because I do, that's what I do on the weekends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
They're... The current Prime Minister, Abe, is actually running on, it's very interesting as you're seeing this all over the world, he's a bit of a nationalist, too. There is discussion now in Japan, and it's fascinating because it's coinciding with the new Godzilla movie coming out. No, I mean, this is right. The Wall Street Journal did a story about this. The new Godzilla movie that is coming out is a movie. Godzilla was always a reaction to what happened in World War II. It was both sort of Japan getting destroyed again. So it was like a guilt thing. But on top of it, it was from a monster that was created by nuclear waste, essentially. It's a bit of a fable that surrounds that moment of reconciliation that the Japanese people were doing with their past and their present. So as a piece of art, it's fascinating. So right now, as this new movie is coming out, the new movie, instead of the Japanese going, oh, this is so bad, and showing the government people as incompetent and unable to deal with this, they're showing the government as strong and very competent.
Yeah.
And Abe, it's reflecting a political moment there in which Abe has discussed publicly wanting to renegotiate the terms of the surrender from 1945.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, all you have to do, and I actually just kind of read a book or an article or something. I don't read much, but I found something about this where it was like, I do read. But anyway, it was talking about how media portrays the future and that being related to the public feeling and people's optimism or pessimism. For instance, you go back in the 1960s or 70s and you have a movie about the future and it's always flying cars and, you know, cool things.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, anytime you have a movie about the future, it's, you know, an apocalyptic wasteland. And so what you're seeing all over the world, though, is after a time of economic uncertainty. So Arthur Brooks was talking about this, very smart conservative thinker. And he said any time in history after a period of economic uncertainty like the Great Recession that we just basically came out of is you will always see a 15-year tail at least of political instability, a turn to nationalism, this idea that, you know, it's got to be somebody else's fault we're in the position we're in. Those other people are the, you know, the immigrants or the, you know, other countries and things like that. And so that's natural. And I guess you're seeing that worldwide at this point.
Ethnic minorities or people who can't vote. I mean, that's what, to me, that's one of the interesting things about Trump. Who was the first person that Trump vilified? It was illegal immigrants who can't vote. So if you're going to go after somebody, who's the easiest person to go after? It's that. What do you make of, and I want to ask you, because we're going to have a senator on coming up in a little bit. There's an investigation into whether the Russians are actually, this is a federal investigation into whether they're actually trying to mess with our election cycle here. And what does that mean?
I mean, this is totally in line with Vladimir Putin. I mean, this is the kind of, you know, Cold War stuff that he, you know, the Russians and Americans, frankly, would have done back in the Cold War. He's doing this now. He does this in Eastern Europe. He does this in terms of influencing elections, you know, putting secret money, and I'm not saying that that's happening here in terms of secret money, but in terms of that influence and getting involved. And I think he made it very clear when he said, you know, there's no state sanction, was his way of getting around the fact that there's kind of quasi-state sanctions in doing it. So, you know, look, I'm not going to jump to conclusions, especially since there's an ongoing investigation, but I think all signs point to, you know, Vladimir Putin and or some of his cronies hacked the DNC, and I think they ought to be, you know, that ought to be taken very seriously if, in fact, that's the case. And I, you know, Putin even said, look, well, this whoever did it provided a great service. Look, you know, when it comes to hacking emails and when it comes to that kind of stuff, I still believe that even public figures, as much as people hate certain public figures, even public figures have a right to have discussion over email without it always being, you know, hacked and broadcast everywhere else. I mean, we've all sent emails that we wouldn't want on the public record. And so to say that somehow that's a great service that it's been done, I think it's a really dangerous slippery slope when we start using, you know, hacked email as legitimate political fodder.
You know, if pictures speak a thousand words, those pictures of Putin and Obama together, you could ooze tension if you could feel it just looking at them. What do you make of their meeting? The president said that it was candid and they said it was blunt, but that we've got some things to do we still need to agree upon. When you feel, what was your reaction to that roughly 90-minute meeting?
This Putin Obama relationship almost feels like, you know, the girl you've been waiting for 2 years to ask out to the prom, and she finally ends up taking out somebody else. And you know, you look at that and you say, okay, well, you got Vladimir Putin who's, you know, supposedly trying to have this peace process in Syria. Meanwhile, he's stiff arming the U.S. government. Blowing up our allies on the ground, updating, you know, I guess stiffening the backbone of Assad and Hezbollah and the enemies of freedom. And meanwhile, you have, you know, John Kerry and now I think Barack Obama continually, in essence, asking for us to get to this peace process. So I think there is definitely a lot of tension, that's for sure. But I think, you know, Barack Obama can be in the catbird seat with Russia. I just think he's uncomfortable exercising that kind of powerful strength that's going to be necessary to back the Russians off. They don't want to end up in an armed conflict just as much as we don't want to end up in an armed conflict with them. Right. But they know that if, in fact, there's any kind of a force-to-force thing, America would win very one-sided, which, in fact, makes force that much less likely that it'll ever be used.
Mm. That's an interesting observation and true. I just wonder, I want to drag you back into something else that happened over the weekend that I found kind of, well, I don't know, scared crapless over. At the G20 summit, the president arrives in Air Force One, and they don't bring the proper staircase out to him. The Chinese government, he lands in Beijing, and they don't have the big staircase and a red carpet, and he comes off the lower staircase of Air Force One. They've got this one that's in the bottom of the aircraft, bottom of the fuselage. He comes out of. And Trump seized on that moment and the imagery of that the optics of it and said, you know, this is proof that they're not showing any respect for him. If I were president, I would have just told the guys, close the door and I'd fly away.
Yeah. Well, look, I don't doubt that that was actually, maybe I'm wrong here, but it seems like that might have been kind of an intentional slight. You know, you're not going to not have the right staircase when the president of the United States is coming in. But the reaction, and this is, again, this has been my concern, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time just going after Trump, but one of my concerns is when somebody's critical to you or slights you, that's part of the job of being president of the United States, to have that thick skin, to be able to, you know, to recover from coming out the bottom staircase, like it really diminishes your power, and being able to actually exercise your power and your strength at the G20 summit. But to just say, well, now I'm going to pick up my ball and go home, is not the kind of, you know, if we want to stay out of war, which we all do, you have to have diplomatic strength. Well, diplomatic strength doesn't exist when you're going to, you know, pick up your ball and go home. The Chinese would have loved if President Obama would have picked up his ball and gone home, because now they could have run the G20 summit without the United States being the counterweight, talking about the right of the seas, talking about these fake islands the Chinese have built. They would have loved if President Obama or a Donald Trump would have done that. So don't give them that victory.
Excellent point, Congressman. I couldn't have said it better.
You can really imagine Trump just picking up and going home.
That's right, we're going.
That's something that's totally imaginable, I think.
I'm not doing that.
I'm not going to go down the lower staircase. I have the big escalator I go down. Or what is that thing? Right. Remember when he announced his campaign?
Right, exactly. Yeah. He's going to have a gold staircase that comes out of Air Force One. So they're going to make the plane gold. He's like a Bond villain. He really is.
Right.
Congressman, thank you very much.
Thanks,
appreciate
you.
Yeah, as always, guys. Take care.
Thank you. There he goes, Congressman Adam Kinzinger.